the ladder of development of the life force, the dimensions, the abodes of life, the path of the carrier of divine consciousness. Nothing in creation is found wanting or idle. The Father created everything with infinite care, with the finest gradation, and with incomprehensible love. The marvelous laws of the universe stand at the service of His children, whom He loves with an infinite love. They, however, have been given so high a degree of freedom and dignity, that they have the possibility of opposing God's plan of love and everlasting life, and bringing it to utter confusion. Man must come to realize that he is a creature with the single limitation that he is not God, and therefore it is to God alone that he owes obedience and love. The sin of forgetting that was the beginning of evil in the cosmos. I thought about the fact that Earth men seem to conduct their lives as though this were the only one. So I put the question to Raphael, isn't it possible to give some concrete evidence to Earth men as proof that there are other worlds where beings like you are living? That would surely bring more certainty to their thinking, for they live in the error of maintaining that after life on this earth, there can be no other. Raphael looked at me with loving kindness, but in his eyes was a half-veiled sadness, which seemed to me almost like a reproach. You still do not understand, he said after a pause, that it is not the outward proof that will cause many to turn from error and wrongdoing. So many proofs have been given to man over the many thousands of years of a history full of blood and injustice. But these were rejected, and so, for many, the responsibility and blame grew greater. Jesus gave many proofs during his public life, also as he died on the cross, and even after his death. Few, however, have accepted them. Today, many people are seeing things which would make it possible to accept the reality of what we have told you, yet they have given them a misleading explanation. And when they are persuaded to give up their skepticism, they console themselves by saying that one day these facts will be explained by conventional science. Your world will not be saved by proofs, but by the love, patience and belief of those on earth who are already spiritually progressed, namely men and women of goodwill. The unlimited power of love will triumph over evil, which is ultimately limited in its nature. So your way of death and of rule by force will come to an end. The love of the Father, and of His children, who are true to Him, will be the irresistible power that moves the stubborn-hearted, then will their minds be opened. Of what use is it to appropriate new truths without first having gotten rid of the errors in one's way of thinking? It would only increase the burden of blame. You must understand, he said, that the light that is given mankind is just that which is most useful, not more, for too much would harm the eyes of your understanding, so accustomed to the darkness. Does that mean, I asked, that this illumination will come not all at once, but in gradual steps? That's right, responded Raphael, who seemed to have grown more cheerful. God does not wish to destroy, and our actions toward His erring children are in accordance with His love. Still, it is important to do all that is possible to make sure that the paths to evil do not extend beyond certain allowable limits. The farther His children stray from the right path, the more painful is the return. Suffering is the great universal voice that yearns for salvation. It is the echo of that which God the Father feels, whose anguish is immeasurably greater than all the sorrows of His creatures. He allows His children, beset by fears, to taste a tiny crumb of this divine anguish, in order that they may come to realize that true happiness comes only by staying close to Him, in His truth and wisdom. Silence reigned. I had never thought about the fact that God was a being who could suffer anguish. I had imagined that nothing could disturb His infinite bliss. Firkin looked into my eyes, I knew that he could read my thoughts. He smiled, then he grew more earnest, and said, "Certainly, my dear, nothing can touch the infinite bliss of God. But that does not mean that He cannot, at the same time, sorrow over the waywardness and suffering of His children. He suffers with them, but He does not lose His divine bliss." Then he was quiet and thoughtful. He sighed, and added with great earnestness, "If you could only know what is meant by the sorrows of God." He said no more, I only noted he seemed suffused with sadness. I saw in him a great son of the Father's, totally dedicated to manifesting the limitless love of that infinite being, a being who had given his children the extraordinary gift of freedom, and did not deserve to have such a trust betrayed. I asked a pardon for my slowness of comprehension and my hardness of heart. Raphael smiled and said that all creation was a school of love. He assured me that this was a truth that would be verified to anyone who opened his heart to goodness and simplicity. Now Kalna's sweet voice joined with the others in conversation. Her countenance was radiant. "The scriptures," she said, "often speak of the innermost heart in which God speaks to his children. It is in the dimension of the spirit, that part of the human being which corresponds to the innermost consciousness. Heart and spirit mean the same thing, in the scriptures. The heart does not concern itself with the difficulties of understanding, but it is capable of immersing itself in the contemplation of God, in his love, his truth, and his very being. When the children of the Father cross the border we have called Heaven's Gate, and enter the universe of pure spirit, then do they see with unobstructed vision the divine and its infinite wonder, then do they participate in everlasting life, not with the mind's understanding, but in a clearer fashion by the heart and soul. Men of earth have placed inordinate value on the mind's ability to analyze and formulate, but they have imprisoned the heart. They have become lost in a labyrinth of thought, and have allowed pride to establish its presence in the all-pervading intellectual process. First, errant understanding sought to nullify the heart, and directed all its disrupting activity toward its enslavement. But to destroy the dimension of the heart is to bring about everlasting death, the death of the spirit, the ultimate repudiation. Jesus spoke truly to you concerning these matters. Your misfortunes," Kalna continued, "stem from the fact that, in you, mind and heart stand in constant conflict. Or, to put it a better way, you have set matter and spirit against each other. This state of war arises from the pride that dwells within you. Pride leads to trouble. All of your afflictions, in the dimension of the spirit, come from your mind, which is permeated with pride. If you could free your mind from its presumptuous arrogance, and become meek and simple, pure and good, as the Father God created you, then you would solve the whole problem of evil and your unhappiness." Now Ilmoth entered the conversation. Her eyes sparkled. "You are convinced," she said, "that it is hard to get rid of pride. You are right about that, for just now are you able to see everything through the lens of understanding, and also the way of purification. Moreover, you have been taught a perfectionistic way of purification, which for you is not realistic, so that you finally came to the conclusion that the way of goodness for you on earth was impossible. Also, this came about because your teachers and spiritual guides were themselves often full of pride and perfectionism. In reality, however, the way to purification and release from overweening pride consists of small steps, a gradual purification, bit by bit. Similarly, one breathes more and more oxygen into the lungs, in order to rid the body of toxins. Your spirit has all the potential needed to bring about a complete turnaround, if you would daily bring to your consciousness more humility and simplicity, and you would also discover that you are something more than you previously believed you were. On the other hand, if you allow yourselves each day to go a little farther toward evil, through ignorance and arrogance, then the dimension of your heart will die as surely as if stabbed to death, without your even being aware of it. God is good. He regards lovingly even the smallest impulses toward good within your heart. He requires very little from his lost children, in order that they might be saved. But if one is to be saved from overweening pride, one must turn away from arrogant thoughts. Humility and simplicity lead to humility and simplicity. Love and patience lead to love and to inner peace. Don't think too much about your badness, but much more about the goodness of the Father, and of his faithful children, who work for your well-being in his name." Now Raphael spoke again. "The intellect," he said, "has the ability to alter and distort that which it receives from the dimension of the heart. Yet a thoughtful and well-disciplined mind, not in contradiction to the voice of the Spirit, can help the heart to express its unique wisdom. the intellect becomes ensnared if it represses or subverts this wisdom. Then the heart and the mind become enemies of each other, and the result is all manner of misfortune and sickness, which have brought so much pain and hardship into your lives. I repeat, the mind can become the enemy of the all-embracing love and laws of God, and can be used to destroy the love within the human heart. The way which has been shown to you, as we have pointed out several times, is the way of simplicity, humility, and loving kindness. Strive toward these things, for you owe it to God. Pray to Him for a new mind and you will see salvation come. Ilmuth continued, for one who loves the good, there is no death. It is a great error to believe that everything ends with the death of the physical body. This is the fruit of inner blindness and ignorance. To die means to be born with a new body on another planet, it means to allow new life potentials hidden within you to find expression. To enter life in new worlds means to allow a more highly developed consciousness to become active, it means to be happy or in a higher state of awareness, in an environment with richer possibilities. Jesus warned men of earth to beware, lest the love within their hearts be swallowed up by their pride, and the brilliance of their minds, for thus they may become spiritually impoverished to such a degree that they can no longer be born on higher planets. But they run the risk of falling into such a state of confusion that it can only be compared with death. The sorrow of the father over these lost children is so great that they become aware of it, their troubles increase, because their stubborn wills refuse to free themselves from their imprisonment by their own hardness of heart. There are some who are so obdurate and behave so abominably that they not only become depraved themselves, but they drag others down with them, they become virtual demons. With such, how can one not speak of death? There is always help of salvation, but it is not right to presume upon the generosity and loving kindness of so trustworthy a father. This can bring suffering, for God is just. Woe unto us, if He were not. There followed a silence that seemed somehow like an admonition. The sun had already set, and the mountains were enveloped in a dark blue haze. The valley seemed to have grown more mysterious. Raphael said it was time to bring our visit to a close, but he also promised to meet again with us soon. "We have much more to say to you," he remarked. Evening was near, and the twilight drew its soft mantle over all the surrounds. We bade farewell like friends of long standing, sad that we must part. We were asked by Raphael to stand back a few dozen meters. We saw the little door of the flying disc begin to open, and a snow-white light shone through, illuminating all the surrounding flora. All went aboard, and again raised hands in a gesture of friendship. Then the door closed noiselessly once more and immediately the disc rose up with unbelievable speed. Shortly afterwards, it had disappeared from sight. The meadow grass was pressed down flat where the disc had rested, while taller grasses rustled slightly in the breeze. Chapter 9, A Light on the Sea. On the evening of the 15th of June, I was at home, and was just about to read a portion of the Book of Genesis, when I was aware of coming into cosmic contact. The voice of Firkin was inviting me to come with Tina and our friends to Nervi. We drove there and parked near the railway station, as before, then started off on a long walk, but nothing unusual was seen or heard. Yet I remained calm. I was certain that the brothers would show up before long. We walked first on the road to the small village, then turned and came back on a walkway by the sea. Gianna said she was ready to spend the whole night walking, if they could surely see something. I responded that patience would always be rewarded, yet, in my heart, I began to fear that, for whatever reason, they might not be able to appear. Suddenly, however, we saw a white light coming across from the sea, from the direction of San Fraos. In his excitement, Paolo shouted out loudly and I had to urge him to regain control of himself. The light came nearer, until it was about 50 meters from the shore which our walkway bordered. Now the flying disc was there, where it could be easily seen by all, and Paolo and Gianna called out excitedly, "It is really them. It is the brothers." Paolo had a clear cosmic contact, and he could tell us exactly what was about to happen throughout the various phases of the encounter. "Now they are switching on the white light on the underside," he said. And the light really did go on. Now they are making the light brighter. And the light would grow brighter. Now they are about to dim the lights. And the lights would grow dimmer. And so it continued. Paolo announced in a loud voice when the red, green and blue lights would go on, and they promptly did so. The flying disc changed many different colors, and then flew off in a southwest direction and disappeared over the horizon. The voice of Raphael reached me in cosmic contact, recommending that we restrain our eagerness for a contact, and suggesting that we leave that area. I was afraid that the other people there, who had also seen the disc, might stop us and question us about it, but Raphael assured me that this would not happen. There was an older couple near us who stood there literally open-mouthed, staring into the heavens. They probably could not possibly have made sense out of what was really there. Perhaps they could have believed it was some unusual aircraft. I thought about giving some such explanation to them, but Raphael advised me not to do it. I obeyed, and we went from there with great joy in our hearts. Chapter 10, The Blessed Lady. The following meeting took place in the grain fields of the Great Plains region. We had spent many hours together by auto. As always, we were directed by cosmic contact. The weather was warm and pleasant, though the sun was from time to time covered by a thick cloud. Having arrived at the place of meeting, we left the car and continued by foot alongside the fields of grain. The arch of the heavens seemed much wider than it did in the mountainous regions where our previous contacts had taken place. Suddenly, we saw several formations of flying discs going by, such a number of spacecraft that we were utterly amazed. As each formation flew by, there was a distinctively pleasant sound, as of waves, or the music of innumerable heavenly choirs. Then we saw the starship coming from a certain point in the sky. It came closer, and then came to a stop, hovering several hundred meters over the field of partly harvested golden grain. A flying disc emerged, larger and more beautiful than any we had seen before. Tina, as always, broke out with irrepressible shouts of joy. The cosmic flying disc landed on the small strip of meadowland that separated two grain fields. Raphael, Firkin, Orthon, Kalna and Dilmuth got out, accompanied by a young woman of exceptional beauty, who impressed us deeply. All were simply dressed, with loose flying suits or long dresses that came to the ankles. The fabric seemed light and without seams, and the colors shimmered from beige to light blue, and from blue to violet. The young woman was dressed in soft, sky blue, her hair was chestnut blonde, and fell to her shoulders. She wore a pair of sandals that seemed to be woven of gold, yet gave off such an iridescent splendor of many colors as to be beyond description. She appeared to be about 20 years of age. Her lovely eyes were blue, and expressed a great kindness and understanding. A quality of refinement and magnanimity radiated from her whole being. She moved with a graceful, natural simplicity as she came toward us. "Welcome to this meeting with us, which we have desired for so long a time," she said softly. Raphael made the suggestion that we sit in the shadow of a large tree that stood on the edge of the little meadow between the two grain fields. The big disc rested on the ground a few dozen meters away from us and we could only see it from a standing position. When we sat down, it was concealed by the tall growth. Everyone found a comfortable spot. The charming young lady sat on a small rise of ground covered with soft grasses. Raphael said that the cosmic beam ship, which we could still see motionless in the sky, was protected by a magnetic field, and would be invisible to other human eyes. The brothers made known their joy in being with us, and we did the same. Then all became quiet, and the lovely young woman from the higher realms began to speak. "When it is permitted to you to travel throughout space in our starships, there will be many other things that we wish from our hearts to share with you. The present mission has as its purpose to bring you the knowledge, and allow you to have the experiences, to make it possible for you to bring our message to your Earth brothers. All life in the universe is connected in the present moment. When a planet is in danger, and threatens the peace and harmony of the Father's whole family, we seek to save it, in His name. All of us had turned toward her, and we listened with rapt attention. The reddish sunlight fell on her face in an engaging play of color and shadow which served to enhance her great natural beauty, while her words and gestures bespoke an extraordinary wisdom and knowledge. The good, she continued, elicits further good, and joy responds with joy. Love stimulates more love, and knowledge promotes knowledge. The whole life of the cosmos is in motion. The same law holds true for the bad, which leads to more of the bad, when it does not serve to demonstrate the futility and harm of wrong action. On your planet, wrong action has brought about more harm, through death and destruction, than was ever known in former times. Nevertheless, we are here to assure you that everything necessary will be done to save you. She was quiet for a while, which only served to focus our attention more sharply, if that were possible. All children of universal love are now working for your planet, which finds itself in mortal danger. Soon the people of planet Earth will experience a period of tribulation, such as you have never known in all of your past history. Now the wonderful lady spoke slowly, and sadness veiled her countenance, her voice was touched with melancholy. In spite of that, her majestic bearing seemed in no way diminished, on the contrary it was enhanced. We are, she began again, unsatisfied with the conduct of the Earth Brothers. In the course of time, we have allowed numerous warnings to be given, and there has been no lack of signs. But still, the originators of death and destruction have carried on with their dreadful plans, and the others paid no attention, not wishing to become too involved, and thinking only of their own affairs. The Father can no longer suffer the foolish obstinacy of many Earth people, and soon these will bring upon themselves a mighty chastisement which will serve to purify their hearts, but also, to bring about the destruction of many of the good and beautiful things that have been accomplished on this planet. With astounding clarity, this exalted being from the higher realms explained what lay on her heart. We extend to the inhabitants of Earth a final invitation, in order that all who, from their hearts, wish for the victory of the good, and the return to the simple, treasured values of life, can join together with us in our efforts for your salvation. As long as the children of Earth do not conclusively renounce the evil tendencies that are within them, we cannot grant them any further knowledge. The Earth cannot remain as it is at present. A new age is needed, to bring all humanity to the point where it can take the right steps to a development which will deliver it from a thousands of years long history of blood and destruction. Her soft voice bespoke both a sense of sorrow and of urgency. We invite all people of goodwill to lift their eyes to heaven, to become better every day, even if for only a few minutes, to open their hearts to humility and loving kindness at least in some small way, so that their eyes will be opened and they will see clearly the enormous danger of Earth's present situation. Then, and only then, will our message of hope and salvation take root within your hearts. One does not have to do very much, but that little which can be done, must be done on a daily basis, in the everyday things of life, and the changes must come in every heart. With a sigh, she added, no one on Earth can avert the destruction that heedless men have prepared for the planet. The rescue must come from heaven, we need the cooperation of all, and a return to compassion and rectitude. This is a goal that truly can be attained by each individual in himself, and in his surroundings, each one can lay a small stone. Many stones will be added by us, and then we will provide for the remainder, so that the edifice of love and preservation for the future may be erected. Our concern for you, she said with a heavy sigh, is a small part of that of the Fathers. In recent years, you have come to a point in history which, to say the least, is far beyond the borders allowed by the Father's universal law, and you take no notice of it, as if you were blind. We send you warnings continually, but you heed them not, as if you were deaf. You do not want to pray, for want of humility, to the one who could save you, and you steer toward an unprecedented disaster, as though it were nothing to be concerned about at all. We want you to come to see this clearly, and to do what the righteous universal laws require, in order that we may spare you enormous suffering. Some suffering is necessary, in order for a new day to dawn upon your planet, in which pain and evil are overcome, but it is possible to avoid the worst, perhaps it is still possible. This is the last great message of love and preservation that we will give, in order to jar your consciences awake to see the things which stand at your door. Her eyes met mine, and then Tina's. I was shaken to the core, for I thought, if this was the last warning, we must have arrived at a point where the outlook was exceedingly grave. I felt for a moment utterly confounded, yet the grace and compassion of her countenance saved me from complete despair. We will never be believed, I said. No one will want to believe that you have given us a last warning about the danger hanging over the earth. To this, she responded. The events soon to occur will make many of the proud become humble, and those who are more agreeable by temperament will become more receptive as they see increasingly that events are occurring exactly as you have told them. When God asked Moses to deliver his people from bondage, and Moses expressed his doubt that people would believe in his mission, the Lord assured him they would believe him because they would see with their own eyes that his words were being fulfilled. Certainly you also must accept the fact that many will laugh at you and contradict you, and your words will not serve to better those who are lacking in humility. But you should say them anyway, and we will stand beside you. It is urgently necessary for all to keep the true situation before their eyes, and to encourage each one to change his or her thinking and individual life toward more simplicity and compassion, even if only a little each day. We will also teach you to pray, and everyone will see that prayer is the most beautiful response that the children can make to the Father. Nothing is simpler or greater than to put one's self in union with the whole brotherhood of universal love of the children of the good Father and Creator. This is another one of those things that Earthmen of simplicity and goodwill must continue to do if the planet is to be saved. Her last words were not clear in my mind. Had I understood what she was saying? She read my thoughts, and said, "To pray means to lift one's own heart to heaven, to the Creator, and to us, his faithful children. Pray in the way you find most effective, at the time that suits you best, but neglect not to pray. It requires so little, but it accomplishes so much." With great earnestness, she continued, "The present times on earth were foretold thousands of years ago. The signs that would herald this age were also foretold. These signs have now been given, and continue to be given. However, man on earth is too egotistically preoccupied with thoughts of his own personal advantage, with his needless fears, and the continual pursuit of his misguided ways. We will speak of that in more detail when we are on board our starship. Above all, I want to tell you that a wonderful time lies ahead for planet Earth. That long foretold age will come, in which the dreams of people of goodwill can be fulfilled. There will be no more death, or sickness or sorrow. Righteousness will come alive in the hearts and lives of the children of Earth. But mankind has the power to thwart this final consummation of the planet, through acts of irretrievable destructiveness. We would take a hand in things, to rescue those who would be sacrificed to such total devastation. It is incumbent on all of you to prevent such a catastrophe, and to make possible that, after the storm, a time of peace and joy shall come to Earth on its upward climb toward the happy state of the more highly developed planets. At all events, this time shall come, and it could be very soon. After that, all prophecies will be fulfilled, concerning the last days. Truly, these things foretold in the scriptures will occur, but the hour and duration is known only to God, for the reason that the freedom of all his children is genuine, and not one of appearances only. My mind contested with my heart, which fully grasped the meaning of her words. The majestic lady from the higher realms smiled, and gave me renewed courage. Do not try to understand all at once those things which will be explained to you later. We will prepare you gradually, so that you will not be overwhelmed. We will also help you to accept the things of great import that will be revealed to you. This is quite necessary, and you need never fear losing your inner balance. We will give you peace and tranquility, strength and courage. You, yourself, will be astonished about this. I was grateful to her, and I could see that Tina had a more relaxed expression on her face.